I'd like to call the Transportation and Transit Policy Subcommittee to order for today. We are slowly getting a quorum, so we'll skip to testimony on the bills. Before I get to that, I wanted to just lay out kind of the agenda for the next couple of days and the plan for putting together the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill. As many of you know, the deadline for policy bills is this Friday. So we are going to hear testimony on bills today. We have eight bills on the agenda, so we may go a little over 5:30, but hopefully not too long. I'm going to try to keep the meeting moving, as Representative Holbrook taught me to do in the past. And we're going to reconvene tomorrow at 2:15 and hear some more bills, and if necessary, meet at 6 o'clock after committee. I hope not, and if we meet at 6, I hope it'll be relatively short. So that's the plan. We are going to then, the bills that have been laid over for inclusion, we'll take a look at, and then we'll have a bill on Thursday. We hope, we've been in contact with members of the minority, and we're going to continue to do that so that there aren't a lot of surprises on Thursday. I hate to rush a process like this, but because of the deadline, we really we don't have a lot of choices, because it's more important, I think, to hear these bills and give them all an opportunity to be included. If we need to, we'll meet on Friday again. I'm hoping we can complete the markup of the policy bill on Thursday. Are there any questions or concerns about that that roadmap, Representative Holbrook?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the information that you provided to the minority. That's been very helpful. Two things. Is the Thursday meeting a subcommittee meeting or a Transportation Finance Division meeting? And then the second question is, which bill will be the base bill for your policy committee, so if we want to prepare amendments for Thursday, that they're prepared to the right bill?
Thank you, Representative Holbrook. I can certainly answer the question on the base bill. We haven't, I don't think we have a particular bill at this point. I don't know, Representative Leader and I will have a conversation about that. When would be kind of a preferred time you'd like to know that?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think it goes more towards
preparing of amendments.
And
yes.
Preparation of amendments. We can, of course, get the wording, but in order for them to do the amendment, they need to know which bill will be the base bill.
Yeah, I hope that by tomorrow, sometime in the afternoon, we'll have concluded that. And then I'm sorry, I forgot already your first question.
The Thursday meeting, is that a subcommittee meeting?
Oh, yes. The entire committee will mark up the bill. We felt it wasn't necessary to have duplicative meetings. And some of these bills were heard by the full committee already, so there was really no need to send them back to the subcommittee. And we felt in, you know, the interest of time, we would mark it up in the full committee. So I hope that's okay.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Ruth.
Would that mean then that Wednesday afternoon we would get the bill for that, so that we could, if we're going to be hearing it on Thursday in committee, correct?
Well, probably more in the evening. I mean, we're going to still be hearing some of these bills. I mean, you could have certainly most of it. Is that correct, Mr. Lewis? I don't know if we would be able to give you the bill in bits and pieces, but the delay here, and I'm open to giving people more time, if that's the will of the committee, because we do have a room and we do have a tentative Friday morning agenda. And so I really want to make sure everything's fully vetted. But, you know, at this point, we can't really begin to put together the bill until the hearings tomorrow are concluded. You know, certainly this morning I thought we really have to. We'd have no choice but to do it Friday. But I still think we can try to get stuff done on Thursday. And that's what our staff has indicated. I know Mr. Burris has some other ideas, but we'll try to do our best.
Okay, but Mr. Chair, if we're meeting tomorrow night, so then we wouldn't be getting the bill until after that tomorrow night. And then we would have it up on Thursday.
Yeah. If you feel, I mean, I'm really willing to make a call now to do it on Friday, Representative Ruth, if you feel like it's just not enough time.
Well, I'm just concerned about our members. Like, I'm not sure if they're, I mean, a lot of them aren't even here right now. We're so busy with all the committees that I just don't know if I can get people, you know, if we can get our people together enough just to be able to look at it and hear from others. You know, we want to talk with other people about the bill, so I hate to do a Friday committee that might work out there. Just so we would have some
okay.
time, that's all I'd ask.
Let me do this, Representative Ruth, and I'll try to have a conversation after our meeting tonight with the chair and with our staff and see what makes the most sense. I had anticipated this morning that we really would have to do it Friday, but we thought that there's a possibility of doing it Thursday. We could do it Thursday. But I want to make sure people have enough time to go through the bill. I want to make sure that our staff has enough time to prepare the bill. So
thank you.
Maybe I'll even give you an answer by the end of this meeting.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Any other questions then about our process here? Okay. Well, let me call on Representative Simon then for our first bill today, House File 1062. Now, for those in the public who are here on House File 1062, I understand there was a fairly lengthy conversation about this bill earlier today in the Senate, and I don't want to have to cut off testimony, but we do have a full agenda, and if it's okay with both sides, I would really propose that Representative Simon, you and your testifiers could have 20 minutes, then the other side could have 20 minutes. We'll get through the testimony first, members, and then if members of the committee have specific questions of specific testifiers, you could ask them then. But I want to get through the testimony, get through the public. I understand there's a lot of people that want to weigh in on this. So if that's all right, 20 minutes each side, beginning now. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's always good to be back in the Transportation Committee. I miss it. Thanks for your time, and thanks for getting us on the schedule here. I understand, by the way, Mr. Chair, that the motion will be to lay this over for possible inclusion.
That's correct,
okay.
Representative Simon.
I do have a delete-all amendment, and however you want to handle that, Mr. Chair.
I'll move your delete-all amendment, Representative Simon.
Thank you.
That would be the
A1 amendment.
The A1, okay. You can proceed.
Okay. Does it need to be adopted, or?
Well, do you want to explain the amendment first?
Sure.
Or?
Well, why don't I just, before the committee votes on it, just explain the whole package, because this is a delete-all amendment.
Okay.
Members and Mr. Chair, this bill, 1062, offers a real opportunity for students and for families all over Minnesota. This would provide the option, and I want to stress that, merely the option, for a student seeking a driver's permit, not the license, but the permit only, in other words, just the in-class instructional portion, the permit, the written test, it would give the option to that student, as already exists in a small slice of Minnesota life today, for an online version of that very limited portion of the driver's education. Keep in mind, for homeschool children, we already do this, and they already have opportunities that are other than the in-classroom. So that already exists right now. And this is not a mandate whatsoever. It just puts it on the menu of options that students can have. That's all it does. No parent, no school, no kid has to pursue this if they don't want to. There's no fiscal cost whatsoever to the state. There was originally a fiscal note, but that was eliminated by this amendment, and I'll explain that in a minute. Really, this is an opportunity. And where it's been tried in other states, it's been very popular. Parents have raved about it because it's very convenient. It's one less thing that parents have to shuttle their kids to. And particularly in rural areas, this has been a real benefit. Most important, I think we can all agree, for any driver's ed program, is what this program provides, which is safety and security. That, of course, is the bottom line. We shouldn't sacrifice those other things if safety and security aren't at the top of the list. And that's what you have with this option. We've been working with the Department of Public Safety, and in fact, under the terms of the amendment, they would need to approve this. So this isn't some fly-by-night operation. The Department of Public Safety, which has been in close consultation with the advocates here, would need to approve that. And, you know, I think Governor Pawlenty got it right when he said during his State of the State address and in other times, and I don't always agree with him, but I think he's right generally speaking when he said that we have to have kids learn in ways that are effective for them, that are most effective for them, and not necessarily the ways that they or we as a society have done it for 20, 40, or 60 years. Not that we should abandon the way we've done it for 20, 40, or 60 years, but I don't think it's harmful or hurtful to introduce into the conversation new options and new ways for kids to learn, particularly when we're only talking about the classroom portion, not behind the wheel. That's always a human being, it always should be, but we're only talking about the classroom portion. Now, I know and I understand and I'm sympathetic to the fact that there has been some opposition to this, and largely, at least what I've seen, I've gotten a lot of the emails from folks who are in current driver's ed programs, some of the teachers and others, and I understand that. I mean, that's a natural reaction that any of us would have in a similar situation. But I think that almost every one of the pieces of opposition that I've seen is sort of a sight unseen opposition. And I would ask for people here, not only committee members, but others who are coming to the committee to testify, to just keep a slightly open mind and watch what you're about to see, and don't pounce before you've seen it, because what you're going to see is going to impress you. So let me then hand it over. Well, I suppose, Jay, you'd like me to discuss
the
bill.
Well, with that, I think we've got a pretty good explanation. Let's get the bill in the form you'd like at first. Are there any questions about the A1 amendment? All in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, the motion carries. So the bill is in the shape you'd like, and I think you've pretty much explained it.
I pretty much explained it, and I would like to hand it over to Aspires, who introduce himself, Gary Sifrin, and walk you through a brief presentation that shows you what this is all about.
Okay. I just want to clarify, I wanted to give Representative Simon some time to present his bill, so we'll start now with the 20 minutes for each side. So, Mr. Sifrin, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Gary Sifrin, and I represent DriversEd.com, and we are an approved provider of driver's education here in Minnesota. We provide a book course to homeschooled students. In fact, Minnesota law allows for distance learning of driver's education. Online driver education classroom instruction is, of course, available for novice adult drivers, and adults we define as 18 and above here in Minnesota. Driver's education for teachers that are looking to get a certification as driver's ed instructors, they're able to do that online. And we have been operating as a driver's education provider here in Minnesota since 2005, again, for homeschooled students only, and for them we provide a course in the form of a book, a correspondence course. So this is just by way of suggesting that there's nothing radical that this bill is proposing. DriversEd.com is a recognized provider of driver's education in 7 states. I draw your attention to this because in each of these 7 states, we're regulated by a different regulatory agency. It is not the case that we simply published the course online, students started taking it, and then they received their learner's permit. Rather, we're regulated by departments of motor vehicles, by departments of education, by departments of public safety, by the Motor Vehicles Business Group, and of course here in Minnesota, the Department of Public Safety. What do the studies say about the efficacy of online driver's education as compared to classroom driver's education? I'll just draw your attention to 2, and you should have this in a packet. Dr. Randy Flemmer, in 2005, in a study called A Comparison of Participant Outcomes Between Traditional Classroom-Based Defensive Driving and Online Defensive Driving, concludes, quote, in summary, online defensive driving, when properly set up, delivered, and monitored, can be equally effective in terms of student performance as compared to traditional classroom delivery models. Just one more. The California Department of Motor Vehicles in 2003 conducted a study, the effectiveness of home study driver education compared to classroom instruction, the impact on student knowledge, skills, and attitudes. This is the Department of Motor Vehicles in California, a disinterested party, and they conclude, quote, the findings present no compelling evidence that home study courses are less effective than classroom courses for teaching driver education, end quote. Again, I'm stressing here, this is driver's education, the classroom portion. This is not driving simulation for getting behind the wheel. Behind the wheel is done with a licensed driving instructor. The curriculum. Our founder and CEO is a driving school professional for over 25 years, and the curricula that are the basis for the DriversEd.com courses are based on his experience. Our driver safety education curricula are offered in different languages, which is also which is something unique that you can do online that you can't always do in a classroom situation, at least not the same school, not the same provider. We offer our courses in English, in Spanish, in Vietnamese, in Japanese for foreign visitors to the United States, in German for Fahrschule Online DE, in Chinese for DMV practice tests, and in Russian for traffic school, that is for adult motors who get moving violations. I want to pause very briefly on what some of the features of the course are. I understand that there is often confusion about what online education is. Online education is not a book that's thrown onto the web. It's not just HTML pages that you are not reading in a book, but you're reading online. That's not what online courses are. I think if that's what they were, Harvard, Stanford, Yale would not be offering online courses. I can speak to the driverz.com online course. We offer a modular course design where we can control the pace with which the student is presented the information. We can control the timing, how long the student spends on each slide. Our courses are navigable. That means that at any one moment, the student can navigate backwards, even though we control the pace of them navigating forward. We offer 2D and 3D animations, which I'll get to in a second. Textual and graphic elements serve to complement the content of the course that they're presented with. Online movies, final testing, student and technical multilingual support. Let me show you just briefly what this looks like. These are flash-driven, fully animated courses, again, not just books published online. You can see here that even the narrative elements are animated. You can see here that they're complemented by graphic elements. We offer fully streaming online video. So one example here would be Red Asphalt 4, produced by the California Highway Patrol. This is what you might associate with a driver's education class. Brutal driving under the influence consequences, right? We do this one-on-one online video. In Minnesota, we would hope to use the Minnesota Life Source video, for example. In addition to that, we do something that's quite unique, which are real driving situations, what we call interactive case studies. And we do these both in 2D and in 3D. That is to say, if a student, in this case intersections, is introduced to an idea, not only do they read about it, not only do they see pictures about it, not only are they quizzed about it, not only do they see movies about it, but then they would be confronted with an animation of, in this case, an intersection, ask what they would do in this situation, and then could see the consequences of their actions. Let me pause for a moment on the administrator monitoring tools. This is particularly important. While it is surely the case that there are some fantastic classroom instructors across Minnesota, it is not the case that all of them are so deeply committed to instruction in the class. And the regulatory agencies that are responsible for monitoring may not always have the resources to effectively monitor those courses. In the case of online courses, there are log-on credentials that any regulator or any instructor can log on and at any time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, see detailed progress of each student, a step-by-step, second-by-second view of what the student is doing. This is particularly valuable for us because it also allows us to improve and refine our courses very, very efficiently. Of course, I'll briefly just point out that we've been providing driver's education since 2002, and we're the gold standard in the industry, so we're, you can see the Better Business Bureau online, Trustee, VeriSign, HackerSafe. It's very secure, and it's taken very seriously. Security, very often people ask, well, how do you know that it's the person in front of the computer who enrolled? Well, I've taught in a classroom environment at the university setting, and I can assure you that I have never taken a retinal scan of any of my students. I've never taken a thumbprint of any of my students. And for anybody who's ever taken a blue book exam, you know that we walk around and stamp different pages because all we're trying to do is erect obstacles to prevent fraud. You make it not cost effective. So how do we do that online? We do that online there are manifold techniques. So I'll just highlight two. Personal validation questions. So we can take questions that we have, personal information about the student, and the courses are interspersed where the student is confronted with these questions sporadically, and their time, they have a limited amount of time to answer these questions, and they answer them incorrectly, then there are various sanctions. And depending on the regulatory agency, we can kick the student out of the course, we can send them back a section, we can just have them proceed if they answer questions correctly. Here's an example of what something like that would look like. You could see that there are times. You could see what an example of what it would mean to fail one of these questions. Now you couple that with a content validation question. Basically, you would take the content that's being presented to the student and you quiz them periodically, unexpectedly, not like a quiz situation like, oh, it's the end of a section, I can anticipate there's going to be a quiz, but rather interspersed in the course will be content validation questions, and this ensures that the participant is actually participating in the course. So what are some of the benefits of online education? On-demand learning. That is to say that you don't have to wait for winter break when your high school might be offering driver's education. You don't have to wait for spring break, or you don't have to wait if you miss the deadline because you just turned 15 or 16. Increased motivation. 15-year-olds today are just, though forgive me for overstating this, are constituted differently than I was when I was 15. I grew up without MP3 players or computers or laptops. The way that those students learn, this is not a new idea, are different than the way that you and I are used to learning. Better quality control. I pointed out that there's a uniformity of instruction, so students in rural areas or in metropolitan areas or in other parts of the state would have access to the same quality course. Increased safety. They can do high-risk maneuvers by just seeing what the consequences of those may be. Greater flexibility because it's a modular course, so it's not that you have to do all 30 hours on somebody else's schedule. Improved accountability because, as I pointed out, administrators can monitor precisely what's happening, and there's a digital record of the event. You know that nobody slept through that particular piece of it. Faster revision, so we also know that issues are in and around the changing traffic laws and publishing, and with an online course, we can do revisions in hours, not in years, and of course, it's learner control. I just want to close on this. Online courses allow for families in rural areas to have equal access to driver's education. Rural areas are traditionally underserved by private driving schools. And ease of scheduling allows for more students to access driver's education. What we found is that we expand the number of students that actually end up taking driver's ed, because if you think of two different populations, if you think of overachieving students who play three varsity sports and take AP courses, they might want driver's ed, but they could not possibly fit it into the schedule that's offered by their school or their local driving school. And the same is true for students from economically disadvantaged backgrounds. If they have jobs after school or are responsible for younger siblings, they may not have the opportunity to say, I'm taking 2 weeks to do 30 hours in a classroom here. They may need the flexibility of doing the course on a modular way. One more option for Minnesota families, not at all a mandate. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, thanks. I do have another testifier.
Yes.
I could, before we open it up for questions.
Or, yes, let's finish with the testimony first, and then we'll have questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Debbie Prudhomme, and I've been a driving instructor and driving school owner since 1996. I also am the current Central Vice President of the Driving School Association of the Americas and the co-founder of the Association for Professional Driving Instruction of Minnesota. In 2005, I was also selected as Woman of the Year out of 4,000 driving schools. I direct one of the largest and most progressive schools in Minnesota. Our programs have been featured nationally and internationally, so I'd like to think we know a thing or two. Even though I am involved in all these different levels, I'm here today representing myself and my driving school and not speaking on behalf of any group or association. I felt really strongly about coming here and testifying because I used to have concerns about this very method. In fact, I was one of the most vehement opposers of this type of education. And I wanted to let you know that since I have learned more about it and found out that it will incorporate the things I already offer, I have come to realize it is only right to allow this as a choice for Minnesota teens. My driver ed program offers above the minimum standards. Some do and some don't. But those things will not be lost by allowing teens a choice to take class online. In fact, I would still be opposed to this if providers did not have to go through high schools and commercial driving schools to deliver this program. I would be opposed to it if we did not have to go through a school to be able to take the in-car instruction. I also would be opposed to it if I was not able to offer the other elements of the programming that I think is important, which is parent-teen classes and driver impact panels. I also would like to point out one letter in your packet that I'm especially proud of because these are people that I respect just deeply. It's from the Minnesotans for Safe Driving, and you might know John Cummings. He lost his son in a drunk driving crash a while back, and he has come to be a very strong advocate for safety. I just would like you to keep in mind that teens will not learn to drive on the Internet. That is really an unfair thing to say. The theory part of driver ed, whether it is received in the traditional classroom, on the Internet, or in a homeschool module, will continue to be the important foundation for further learning and training. This is not a mandate. That's also very important. This is a choice for teens. You know, as a side note, I just finished class with 36 teens, and the whole class, I'm thinking about this, I'm weighing these issues, and just by being with them and hearing from them that some people would take it online and some people would not. So whether it's available, it's not going to make any difference to the people who would never even consider it. And I just remember this afternoon, I took my first online class and I resisted it, but it has really taught me a lot. You know, we do have problems in our industry. Currently, textbooks and videos in public high school driver ed programs are out of date, and most commercial schools don't use a textbook. On the other hand, Internet programs are easily updated and kept current. Time does become more focused. More importantly, the online programs are interactive and much more interesting to students. Teens will not get a permit without enrolling in Behind the Wheel and interacting with some of our fine driving schools. There will be face-to-face time, and if driving schools fail to provide that when they can provide it, that would be a sad situation. The emotional pills will still be there. The parent involvement is still there. And so I feel that that does bridge the gap. Schools can develop these programs. I personally have a confidence in our Department of Public Safety's approval process. I believe that everything they ask of us to deliver in the classroom, that that's going to be the standard for the online programs. And what I like hearing from vendors is that they're not afraid of standards. They want to set a very high standard. I want you to know that there are owners, and you have some of the letters in here, that do support this. They do see the value. They're willing to take the chance and change for Minnesota and not just rest on our laurels. Change is part of progress. I wish it didn't have to be so, but it is. We've handed out these letters for your consideration. I want to thank you for hearing this testimony and considering this issue, and I ask you for your support.
Thank you, Ms. Prudhomme, and thank you, testifiers, for keeping within the time limit. Representative Simon, did you want to add anything before we get to the Q&A?
And that's what I was wondering. Are we going to do Q&A?
Why don't we do that? Because I think it's fresh in people's mind what the testimony is. I'd like to limit it if we can. I don't want to artificially cut it off if members have questions, but we are under some constraints. So why don't we take the first question from Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what was the first gentleman's name?
Mr.
Sifford.
Close enough.
Close enough. Anyway, question I had, you said you do it in mods. I remember my three sons took their driver's ed and behind the wheel in the classroom. And you said you do it in mods when you do it online. Now, if somebody's a little bit slower and takes longer, does each mod count for a certain breakdown in time? So, say, I took more longer to do it than Representative Leader here, I would still only get credit for a certain amount of time for finishing each section, or?
That's correct. So times are generally thought of as minimums, not as maximums. So the student only completes the course once they've completed all of the course content. So that's the broad answer, but the real answer is it depends on the criteria that the Minnesota Department of Public Safety is going to institute to regulate online courses.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions from committee members? Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm just a question of the bill author. Does the fiscal note still apply with the delete everything amendment?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, no, it doesn't. There's no fiscal note because of the new amendment. I got rid of the need for a new rulemaking process, so there's no fiscal note, no cost to the state whatsoever.
And, Mr. Chair, then, can you explain on page 2 of the Delete All Amendments, section 2, so are you saying that it's just amend and revisions are less than new rules? Is that the difference?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, that's correct. And this has been an ongoing process with the Department of Public Safety. We were prepared to come in here acknowledging there was a fiscal note or maybe that we needed a change, and the department said, no, you don't if you do this. So.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions from committee members for Representative Simon and his testifiers? Well, thank you very much. Now we'll hear from a couple of opponents, and again, if we can conclude this testimony by approximately 10 to 5, 5 to 5 at the latest, that would be helpful. I'd like to call first on Mr. James Thines. And then I think we'll hear from Professor Isburner, and I don't know if there's anyone else from the audience. We'll try to get them in, too. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. We're hoping that Dr. Isburner will be here. Otherwise, we do have somebody in his stead.
Okay, that'd be fine.
My name is James Thines. I'm a lifelong resident of Washington County. My wife and I own the largest driving school in the state. I'm not going to go through all my credentials. It's written right in there. You can certainly take a look at it from driver's ed to law enforcement to on and on. What I think I'd like to do is to understand that my wife and I do this not because we make a ton of money at it. We could go out in the private sector and make two or three times as much as what we make owning Safeway Driving School. We do this because we have a passion for kids, and that's why I'm passionately here opposing this bill, along with every driving school that I have spoke to, and these were random calls of driving schools. You'll hear me say something more and more time, over and over. It's not about the money. It's about the kids. I'd like to, I feel equally as strong that that this bill shouldn't be passed. Hundreds of parents and thousands of kids have heard me say these very words. This is a Minnesota driver's manual. None of you or none of your children couldn't study this for 4 to 6 hours and pass the permit test. This class is not about passing the permit test. And I'm speaking about the 30 hours. I usually throw it down the table. The bulk of this class is devoted to teaching the what ifs, the whens. That raccoon all of a sudden is in your headlights. What are you going to do? You can't teach that one time on a slide. You have to teach it over and over so your child doesn't end up swerving and hitting a tree or hitting a culvert or rolling your car. They don't get that one time. It's the same thing with drunk drivers or drinking and driving. This needs to be done over and over, the key points. Our classroom lessons consist of 10 lessons, 10 modules, all 3 hours long. Most people have a system like this where you can take the classes in any order. So if a kid misses, that's okay. They can come back and make up that module. During these lessons, our instructors build relationships with the students through their obvious commitment for driving safety and their personal stories. It's through these relationships that teens become open to ideas about common courtesy, driving with a positive attitude, and the fact that you're not anonymous in the car, and cooperating with other road users. Here's just some things you can't do with online education that we do in the classrooms. Classroom discussions with a licensed instructor. I went online and participated in driversed.com's first 20% free on the internet. When it got to, I could click through slides almost faster than I could read them, and I understand that could be lengthened out. When the video came on, I was able to minimize the video, have the audio on, walk in, get a sandwich, talk to my wife, play with the dog, come back, still playing, okay, now what should I do? I'll do some emails, you know, I could have done instant messaging, talk to my friends, whatever. All while the video was playing. When the video was done, no more noise, okay, now you go to the test. You can't do practical demonstrations like drunk goggles, which we do, with field sobriety testing. We use a product called Rules for the Road, which shows graphic illustrations of driving scenes based on students' decisions. So as a class, they decide when they want to when to stop and when to make three choices and then to see what's going to happen. We have these same tools already. We use local stories about Kevin Brockaway, terrible loss of a young man, the White Bear Lake teens that are killed recently in a terrible crash, the Anoka teens that were killed going around the stop arms. These local stories impact these kids' lives, and they make a difference. We're talking about our children. Interaction with other students. Students bringing up questions that other students may have on their mind. Now, the other thing I did when I went on driversed.com is I called their helpline, and I talked to a customer service rep, not a driving instructor. But based on what I see on their website, they have one licensed driving instructor, and that's the owner. That's what I see on their website. The people you talk to when you call up or when a child calls up is a customer service rep. In our classes, each student does their own work. Their heads are up on the videos. They complete the worksheets, or they're not allowed to stay in the program. Again, it's about the kids. It's not about the money. We can make accommodations for students that don't read well, that have other learning disabilities, because we use almost all of our teachers are actual licensed school teachers. The economics of this is really plain. This industry runs on a very low profit margin. We know how many students it takes per month to pay the fixed expenses. And classroom is where the profit is in this business, and we have to make a profit. Behind the wheel only, when you think about it, you've got one-on-one with a teen, or you've got one teacher and good curriculum and 20 teens, what's more profitable? No one can be sure, really, that the person sitting behind that computer is doing the work. So you write down all your key information, and you give it to your friend, or in some cases, I'm sorry to say, a parent. They can go through and do this whole program. No one can make sure that there's not three friends sitting alongside just telling you what the answers are because they went through it. No one, in a homeschool situation, you have parents that are like this with their kids and their learning. We know those parents are doing it, and that's why the exception is made. No one can be sure that the student getting credit just doesn't have a bad attitude and think this is a joke. I'd like to relate just a really quick story to other people who want to speak here. My 16-year-old was supposed to read 4 chapters in a book, write a journal entry for each chapter. Well, with the power of the internet, he was able to go find chapter summaries for this book, for those 4 chapters, read the chapter summaries in 90 seconds, write the journal entries, and get 12 out of 13 points on it. Now, I'm not happy with my son. I told him about that. But that's not potentially life-changing. We're not getting some of these attitudes and these situations drilled in their heads where they make the decision ahead of time what they're going to do for when the situation happens on the road could be life-changing. I believe a vote for this bill is a vote against the smallest of small businesses in Minnesota. This is going to cost jobs. This is going to cost people their livelihood. I believe a vote for this bill is a vote for exporting licensed teachers' jobs out of our state. The money goes to California, not to Minnesotans. I believe a vote for this bill is a vote for higher driver education costs for students. I will have to raise my costs, and I know almost everybody else probably will, for decreasing enrollments in the classroom. Because you still have to provide that classroom. And all that goes with that classroom, if it's 10 kids or if it's 20 kids. So costs are going to go up. I believe a vote for this bill is a vote for lessening the importance of driver's education in the mind of most teens. Driving is mostly about attitude, and it's hard to impact that over the internet. In the words of my 16-year-old son when he saw this, this is way easier and a lot less time, plus it would be easy to cheat. Is that our goal? When we're talking about our kids and driving safety? Finally, there's always and that's those nice words I always hear from a speaker. You're able to see that from a DPS handout that I did put in this packet, that the number one killer of our teens, about you add up all the other reasons together, are traffic crashes. I believe, respectively, a vote for this bill is a vote for higher teen deaths. I'm going to read 2 short things written here. They're both written by Debbie Perdone, and both written fairly recently. And there you have these both. One's a call to action. And it says, additionally, some states have allowed online training with devastating effects to driving schools. And the other one, from the Professional Drivers Association of Minnesota, just consider interactive internet classroom education. This threat is not just to the public schools, We have facilities and other technology resources to conduct that type of training. The threat is also from big companies that provide internet-based training elsewhere in the United States. These companies have even approached our own Department of Public Safety to request DPS allow interactive or internet classroom training. Moreover, if you notice, this is on the agenda from DPS for a potential rule change. If we don't speak together, we'll find ourselves as behind-the-wheel providers only, not to mention that you cannot learn to drive on a computer or a television. The difference, and I make this really, really clear, Liberdome is no longer a driving school owner. She no longer has a program. She works for a behind-the-wheel or driving school program. So what's changed? What's changed is the fact that Ms. Brown no longer makes any money owning a driving school. And for the people that are left that are concerned about public safety, concerned about their kids, that leaves us. And I respectfully ask you to please vote against this bill for our kids' sake. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll have an opportunity for approximately 10 minutes or less for one additional testifier. If sure, then we'll have questions and answers for the opponents, and then we'll allow Representative Simon to have some concluding comments. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the
record. I'm Mary Madden. I'm with Range Drivers Training. I'm in northern Minnesota. You have a letter in your folder from me. First of all, I would like to state that the online programs that are offered in Minnesota now are for adults, that driversed.com is here. The defense of driving course is for adults. That's like that 55 and alive class you would take with a state trooper or ARP. And driver instructors who are training online are adults. And we're not talking about adults here. We are talking about teens with adult consequences to the end. And that's one of the things is that in one of, I believe, two of the states, Texas and Florida, where these programs are already licensed, is they don't have any driver ed requirements. And I think that's a very important upfront fact that you need to know. I am the president of the Professionals Driving Association in northern Minnesota. I service this big green blob up here. We are 16 members strong. We are rural Minnesota. And we unanimously have always opposed online driver education. I take my classroom to the students. Classroom would be online would be devastating. If I lose 10%, if I lose 30% of a 13-person graduating class in Cotton, I cannot afford to go to Cotton. And right now, I take my classroom to that school. I take my classroom to Ely, along with International Falls, traveling to these rural areas. And if you have to stop and think, and we are addressing the economics of these depressed economies, and they may not afford it. If they cannot afford driver education at $80 for my classroom, chances are they cannot afford the $80 for an insurance per month once the student gets the license. And I just think those are some of the ramifications that we have to think about. We have two community ed letters in your folder. I also have over 150 signatures just on adults on a petition. I've got over 125 signatures on students that think this is goofy, and 150 individual letters that I would like to present you to of those other community ed programs. We, like I said, you have a position statement in your folder from us that we unanimously have opposed online, and we stand together as those 16 schools. I think I should bring your attention to the recent rules you're writing. From the fall of 2002 to April of 2004, experts from all venues got together. The
people at Mid-Seattle Saint Cloud State University, DPS officials from tech support to examiners to licensing to commercial, private, and public schools. And Judge Beverly Heidner ruled with the consensus of the experts, classroom interaction, the structure and interaction is needed for students under 18. And I think that it's really a shame that we don't respect the expert opinion that was gathered to rewrite these so recently. I'd also like to say that driving is not a cubicle sport. It's not an extreme sport. It is a social activity where we are going to have to share the road with these students. And I would like to know that a student that I'm going to share the road with didn't minimize the screen, had a snack, and now is going to be sharing the road. Approximately at 15 and a half, within 6 months, if a student takes classroom at 15 and a half, within 6 months, they're going to be our driving peers. And what they learn in classroom has to transfer to behind the wheel. So the program should be consistent in terms from classroom to behind the wheel. And then they get the most that an experienced licensed instructor can bring to them. I know time is short and I need to hear from others. And I would just like you to realize that we haven't really thought of the future ramifications of this bill. And I'm going to throw out one example. When we lowered the curbs to make wheelchairs accessible for the handicapped, we didn't have any idea that it was going to make it difficult for blind people to navigate intersections. And I think it's really important that we think seriously about future ramifications to public safety and we respect the opinions of the experts brought together so recently. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Madden. So you have about 3 minutes for your final testifier. Welcome to the committee.
Yes. How many minutes do we have?
We'll give you 3 or 4 minutes here.
My name is Terry Sunnison. I'm a public school teacher, so I'm representing the public school's view on this. Dr. Brad Isburner from St. Cloud University would have been here, but apparently he could not make it. I wasn't really expecting to talk today. I was more expecting to listen, but I wanted this public school to be represented here as far as their view on this bill, and this is not a good bill. I spent 32 years teaching in driver's education and teaching in my school. I teach at Woodbury High School. My wife is also a public school teacher. She teaches in North Minneapolis at North High School. We both teach driver's education. As teachers, it is all about the kids. It's what is best for kids. And if you vote for this bill, think what is best for kids. As teachers, we have a passion for teaching. And this is not what is going to come about from this bill, from having it online. Kids are going to teach themselves. If that's the case, we might as well have gotten rid of all the classes, not even have high schools, put everything online and have the kids teach themselves. The teacher is the main component in the classroom that's going to drive education, drive learning. And they make kids accountable. Kids have learning disabilities. We work with them. We work with the individual skills of kids. We promote reading. We promote writing. We encourage self-confidence. You're not going to find that doing something online. I understand it's a choice. But again, I think as lawmakers, you want to make sure what is the best choice that we're going to be offering our kids. And on behalf of the public school system, this is not a good bill. This is going to undermine a lot of what we are trying to do. As public schools, we're not here to make money. We can't make money. And I don't make my wage that I make is going to be because I'm a teacher. So when I go out driving and things like this, I'm not there to make money for my school. It's going to break even. But it's the passion for the kids and what's best for kids that's the most important. My wife is just going to say something about the literacy part of this.
Yeah.
Welcome. Please state your name for the
record. Yes, I'm Shirley Sunnison. I teach at North High School in Minneapolis. It was stated that many teachers do not have new textbooks in their classrooms. I do. I have brand new textbooks coming in the next two or three days. The other part is professionals. We do give students online opportunities. I do that through research and other avenues where they can study and get things that perhaps are online but are there for just research and then report to our students, kind of like a jigsaw fashion of learning. And this does happen in the classroom. But again, you need a teacher to supervise and make sure that things are done adequately and correctly. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, if you have questions of Mr. and Ms. Sunnison, Ms. Madden, Mr. Tynes, now would be the opportunity to do that. Representative Holberg and then Representative Houseman.
Thank you. I'd like a question. As far as you said you taught at Minneapolis North, I wasn't familiar that school this was actually taught in the schools. Do the students pay a fee for that instruction?
They do not pay for the classroom. They do pay for their behind-wheel driving lessons.
Well, that's a good deal.
Representative Houseman and then Representative Nelson.
Oh, could I add one more thing? We also, in our classroom, we do have simulation for the students so that it's a decision-making based on time, so they get that as well. So it's a hands-on, too.
Okay. Our Representative Houseman.
And Mr. Chair, mine is probably more to the bill and maybe even when the author comes back just to... Some clarifying issues, and so I...
Okay. Well, we can hold your testimony for Representative Simon. Representative Nelson?
I guess I have a question for one of the previous testifiers, Ms. Prudhomme. There was a statement that was made that she no longer teaches school, and when it was being said, I was watching her shake her head, and I guess I would like some clarification on that. If that is true... If she could come up and answer that question.
Representative Nelson, I think that's a valid question. Ms. Prudhomme should have the opportunity to respond since she was mentioned specifically in the testimony.
I think what Mr. Stein said was that I wasn't a driving school owner and I didn't know I needed my tax return today, but I would have brought it if I would have known that I needed to prove that. That's all I have to say about that.
Okay. Thank you. We can put that to rest then. Any other... questions of any of the testifiers, perhaps maybe on either side. With that, I'd like to thank everybody for testifying, and I really appreciated everybody keeping within the time limits. I'd like to call on Representative Simon then for some concluding comments, and maybe he could answer a question from Representative Houseman.
Mr. Chair, I also have a question
For Representative Simon. Okay, so we'll have... Representative Houseman, Representative Holberg, and Representative Ruth in that order. Representative Simon, let's ask, have the questions first, then you can give your closing argument. Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was sort of looking through material as well as listening, and there's almost a disconnect between opponents that I've heard and what I see on paper, because basically the internet-based theory education is only one piece of this. Everyone still assumes people must be enrolled in behind-the-wheel training, and that ultimately it would be the behind-the-wheel training, I would think, that correlates to safety. You know, do they become good drivers because they obviously need that. And so I wondered, some of the quotes from a few of the handouts suggest that we believe that the internet-based theory, we hope that it would be used with at least one teacher-student session, a parent-student class, and if possible, a driving impact panel. In other words, this will make a very well-rounded education. Another said, those who are not supporting it may not realize this is only a choice, it's not a mandate, and that it doesn't change the significant behind-the-wheel part of the required training. It seems so clear that it's only a little tool. It's like the pencil, and we, instead of the pencil now, I use a highlighter once in a while, because it helps in a way that perhaps the pencil does not. So sense I get is though I heard some of the testifiers say it's not about money, I mean, I could understand a threat to business if they perceived that there was no role any longer for driver's education. But the part that I remember about driver's training was that on-the-road experience. So I sense that we really don't have any conflict here. It's really just a perception about what the bill would do and perhaps a fear of a broader intent. And I don't know if I'm picking that up correctly.
Representative Simon?
I would just say yes. I don't know if I have much to add other than yes, Representative Hausman, that is, and I know you weren't here at the very beginning, but I really do feel they need to stress to members, this is not a mandate, this is an option. And I would say respectfully that many of the arguments you heard are perfectly suitable, adequate arguments for a parent or for a kid to choose a conventional driving school over online. That's absolutely okay. A parent or a kid may say, you know, you're right. I do want to do it this way, or I want my kid to do it this way. But with respect, it's not a very compelling argument, to me anyway, that this should never, ever, under any circumstances, be an option, that it shouldn't be on the menu. I understand, I think, that some parents will just choose to do it a certain way. But to say that it shouldn't even be on the menu when, by the way, the Department of Public Safety would have to approve this, I mean, those are pretty rigorous standards. And when it's only that narrow slice of the driving education pie, I think we just have to put it in perspective, that's all. And I respect parents or families or kids who choose one way or another. All this bill does, at no cost to the state, is say, let's put it on the menu.
And, Mr. Chair, just one final. I was looking through this one piece that I thought, in comparison to some outcomes, that it might have some statistics. We do have some states that already provide for this option, is that correct? And do we have statistics of increased accidents
with
drivers in those states as opposed to others?
Mr. Chair? Yes. Representative Hausman? In your previous comments, you put the nail on the head. The classroom is sometimes using a highlighter. So what results we have are results that show student performance on exams and that sort of thing. With regard to the more significant issue of collisions, you're again correct in your previous comments that it is the behind the wheel that would have the significant impact.
Okay, Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Simon, I came in here today thinking I was probably going to vote against your bill, and maybe it's being laid over and we're not actually voting today. But then as people started talking, I started having memories of when my kids took these classes. And I recall going to one school to pay my money, walking in. There was utter, complete chaos in the room. It was filthy, dirty with wrappers from snack foods and pop bottles all over. It was in the middle of class time. Kids were talking to each other, and I turned around and walked out and went shopping for another school. In addition, when they had their 3 hours, I was always being hit up for snack money because they had a break in their three-hour period in which they could run over to the grocery store and purchase snacks. So the entire three-hour period, they obviously were not being instructed. I also recalled a very busy daughter who, yes, you could come back on various times. So they had, like, I think, classes A through J or something. So if you missed class C when it came around. But it took her about 3 months to be able to hit all 10 sessions, given her schedule with sports and other activities. And as I listen to the testimony, I am going to support your bill as an option. I think that not all parents are slug bugs and are just going to put their kids in a closed room behind a computer and let them, you know, click the minimize button and go get a snack or whatever. I think that this is a decision that parents and kids can make together, and the reality is that they still have to pass the test at DPS in order to get their permit. They still have to take behind the wheel, and they still have to pass the behind the wheel test. And if, in fact, those measurements are not rigorous enough in order to prove that they have the skills to be a safe driver, then let's make more rigorous testing by the state But I do agree that times are changing and that this should be an option for families to choose.
Thank you, Representative Holbrook. Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a limit to the times that the students can take the test?
With regard to, Mr. Chair, Representative Ruth, with regard to the course, it would depend on the requirements of the Minnesota DPS with regard to the exit exam of graduating from the driverz.com course. And with regard to getting their learner's permit, again, that's in the hands of the DPS.
Hey, Mr. Chair, so I just wondered if, can they, and is this online, or the test is taken there, so they can't print off the test or something and keep retaking it? Am I correct?
Mr. Sifrin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ruth, if you're referring to completing the driverz.com course so as to receive the certificate of completion that's evidence that they successfully graduated from the driverz.com course, if that's what you're referring to, then the tests that they see that they have to take online are from a large pool of randomized questions. So while they might see the same question more than once, they would never see the same test more than once. Does that answer your question?
I guess, and Mr. Chair, I mean, I do have some concerns about it, and I appreciate the comments that Representative Holbrook said, because times are changing. But the other thing is, just to keep in mind is that I've taken some classes where we have the cohort groups, and it does make a huge difference. I mean, I was surprised; wasn't sure I was going to actually appreciate those kinds of classes. And it's just such a wealth of information that you hear from all the others, and so I do like that piece of it, but this is a choice. I understand that, but that would be my concern. Is that we know the 16-year-olds are having accidents far more than others, and that would be a concern of mine, that they wouldn't be getting as complete an instruction as they would if they were in a group together.
Mr. Chair, Matt,
with one last closing comment, we really do need to move on.
We offer this online, essentially a MySpace for driving under the influence. It's called imnotastatistic.com. It's part of the driverz.com experience. So as you go through that, you have a MySpace space, which is like a cohort.
Okay.
Thank you very much, testifiers on both sides of the issue, and Representative Simon. Representative Simon, I will renew the motion to re-refer House File 1062 as amended to the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? The motion carries. Thank you very much. And we have a slight change in the agenda. We're going to take Representative Yaros's bill at this time, but I understand we have a lot of interest in House File 528, Representative Kalin's bill. We'll take that next. And then, if we have time, we'll move to Representative Van Zelt's and Junkie's bills. I can wait to do my bill tomorrow. Representative Yaros,
Yeah. Welcome
to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Are we taking up Senate file or House file?
I will move that Senate File 108 be considered for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is a simple bill that would designate about 3.5 miles of Highway 53 coming out of Wisconsin from I-35 to a central entrance in Duluth, the Walter F. Mondale Drive, and the city will pay for the signs. We will not be changing any street signs. It's just going to be a drive. And this, Mr. Chairman, was asked for me from my first opponent, whom I defeated in the primary. And I understand that Mr. Mondale asked him to run against me, so I'm turning the other cheek. I think this is a good idea.
Very, very.
And
wow.
The guy that asked me to do this ran against me as a Democrat, and then he ran as a Republican about 15 years ago. So he's a good guy.
Okay. All right. Well, it goes to show, members, that you know, you can't hold grudges for too long a time. Does anyone have any questions of Representative Yaros, and is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify either in favor or in opposition to this bill. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Come forward for additional testimony.
Mr. Chair and Representative Yaris, in the Senate file, I don't see, you've taken the Senate language now, I don't see that it indicates that they have to pay for the signs. I know this in the statutes, but
okay,
Okay, I got it. It's subject to 161, and that's where I knew it was, but it isn't specific until you read it.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that question, Resident Leader. Hearing no additional questions or seeing no additional interest in testimony, I will renew my motion to have Senate File 108 be re-referred to the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill. All in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a less controversial bill, the cell phone, than when you get around to
that. Yes, I understand that's going to be in another committee.
What was that?
He's very interested in a cell phone bill. Okay, with that, we have another bill where there's a lot of interest, and Representative Kalin, if it's okay with you, maybe we'll invoke that same protocol of 15 minutes on each side for this, if you feel like we need more time. I've been told we have to be out of the room by 6, so I'd like to hear your bill and hopefully Representative Ann Zeltzen Junkies. If we can't do that, please let me know.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Representative Leader.
We definitely have to refer to one bill, so make certain we do that before we adjourn.
Okay, so, yeah, I
and there's
really,
a claim involved there.
Yeah, I'm very strongly inclined to really make sure that people can get their arguments in 15 minutes each side, if we can do that.
Mr. Chair, why don't we reduce that down to 12 and leave some time for discussion and also move on other bills. I think we'll be able to cover
Well, no, that's for the testimony. We'll have Q&A. Okay, yes. Let's do that. 12 on each side. I appreciate that, Representative Kalin. Would you like to move an amendment?
I would like a member of the subcommittee to move an amendment. Yes, the DE2 amendment.
Representative Nelson moves the DE2 amendment.
Mr. Chair, do we first need to move the bill to get in front of us?
Let's move the bill first, House File 528.
Formalities.
And this is recommended for possible inclusion in the Transportation Policy and Finance, the Transportation Policy and Finance Committee for inclusion in the Omnibus Policy Bill.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so the bill has been moved. You have a DE2 amendment as well.
Yes.
Representative Nelson.
The DE2 amendment to put the bill in the form the author wishes.
Okay, all in favor of the DE2 amendment to get the bill in the author's shape, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And the motion carries. So we have 528 before us in the shape that the author wishes it to be considered. Representative Kalin.
I actually have one small oral amendment that I'd like to make on line 2.16.
Okay.
After the word any, insert the word registered, so it should read any registered lien holders.
Okay, Representative Nelson, do you want to move that oral amendment as well? Just to be clear, line 2.16 after the word any, insert registered. We'll vote on that as well. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion carries. Now, Representative Kalin.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and committee. It's my first time before you, and appreciate your flexibility, Mr. Chair, in allowing the folks who come to testify, frankly, against the bill to also have their time today. A little quick history of the bill and then what the bill does now with the DE2 amendment, and then I'll ask Ron Elwood from Legal Aid and then representatives from cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul who've worked hard on the bill as well to come forward. No doubt you've heard from some of our towers on the bill. The core of the bill, the genesis of the bill, is not the first time it's been heard. It's the sort of get your stuff back is probably the very short version of title of the bill. But if you look on page 3, the subdivision 3, retrieval of contents of the DE2 amendment, we do have some folks that are actually being denied access to the contents of their vehicle. And Mr. Elwood has been working with some of his clients for several years to try to rectify the situation. And what I've learned is, by and large, and speaking to private towers especially, is that many towers do actually do the honorable thing, and in fact, most do. There may be a few members of the towing industry that that don't, and I believe that there may be enough to justify passage of this bill. So, but rather than really undermine what is good leverage for some towers to be able to recover the expenses of doing business and the cost of the tow, we actually have worked very hard to look at the abandoned vehicle problem, both in the public impounds of Minneapolis and St. Paul, but also in the private towers. So very quickly, the bill sets up an abandoned vehicle fund, funded by an increase of $1.50 on the title transfer fee, and that's seen in Section 1. And the abandoned vehicle fund, which is found in Section 8 on page 4, then is to be set up, claimed by both private and public towers, up to $300 maximum through a deficiency claim, $75 per tow and $25 a day for storage. And then we're also asking the Commissioner of Public Safety to adopt rules to make sure that it's distributed fairly across the state and not used up entirely by our cities or any one part of the state. We also have included the Section 10 on page 5 there, the Subdivision 8 tow truck, is the exemption from the length and weight limits that happen, that it can actually impede towers from getting their vehicles back if they're caught in a, some of them actually towing vehicles are actually exceeding length and weight restrictions, and yet there's no way to actually get the vehicles off the road. For instance, I heard today about a dump truck that was where the tow truck was held for 5 days because that and the dump truck, the cement truck, excuse me, were over limit, and so they had to negotiate over the course of 5 days. So I've worked really hard to try to make a compromise where we're getting enough to solve a problem for the city of Minneapolis and St. Paul, for the legal aid folks, and also as much as we can for the private towers. So I'd like to ask Ron Elwood to come up and testify to his clients and the genesis of the bill.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Elwood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. I want to thank Representative Kalin for bringing this bill forward this year. Many of you heard this last year, but I think what we've got in front of us this time is really a balanced bill that really serves the interests of everybody in involved in the issue. I'd remind the committee that the bill without some of the additions was passed last year by the Transportation Committee, included in the House Omnibus bill, and similarly in the Senate. Our clients, the reason that this was brought forward in the first place is because we've had instances, and I certainly don't want to paint the broad brush that every private tower is a bad person trying to harm people. That's absolutely not the truth, and by no means do we want to imply that. On the other hand, we have had cases all across the state where folks have been denied things like, and these are actual legal aid cases. So we've had one client wasn't able to get her medicine. Wouldn't give back the children's school the homework for that. The kid's winter coat was withheld. Clothing from the adults. Tools were withheld. And our point last year was, and again, is sometimes, well, if you want to earn the money to repay the towing and storage charges, probably somebody who's a worker would need the tools. We've had cases where people's Christmas presents weren't given back, and in Senate committee last year, we heard Senator Jungbauer tell a story about his friend who was killed in an automobile accident, and believe it or not, the wife's wheelchair was withheld until the charges were paid. I'd also just like to point out that we've worked pretty hard. We've worked with the tow industry, and it's been heard a lot of their concerns. And I'd like to just point out briefly just parts of the bill where we've made some changes to address some of the concerns we've heard. First one would be in Section 2, lines 2.8 through 2.11, where we have provided the opportunity. Right now, under current law, a private tow operator must keep a vehicle on the premises for 45 days. So even if the person came back on day two and said, I'd like my stuff back, they have to keep the car, you know, for 43 more days before they can dispose of it. Under the provision that we've included this year, a person can come forward, surrender the title, and that would allow the tow operator to dispose or sell the vehicle much earlier and mitigate a lot of the storage charges. And that note, and the second thing we've done is in the notice section, which would be on page 2, line 33 to 34, which would tell folks when they get the notice to come and get their car that if you're not going to redeem the vehicle, be prepared to bring the title and surrender it. On section 5, pages, page 3, line 12 through 17, we've also, in the retrieval of the content section, this was in last year, this isn't new, but I'd just like to point out that we've limited the ability of, limited the things that people can take. So it's only their personal belongings. You can't take anything that's affixed to the vehicle. You can't take your DVD, you can't take your stereo, you can't take your hubcaps, you can't take your bumper, things like that. And the amendment that Representative Kalin just made orally is also something that I had heard from the towers and that was omitted from the draft inadvertently, and we wanted to make sure that we added that. And the final thing I'd just like to point out is that in addition to the rights that would be provided in under Representative Kalin's bill that would at least to some degree make folks whole and get everybody essentially what they need, there is a deficiency claim available in statute to be utilized as well. So we really appreciate the committee's time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, well, I think what I'd like to do is have Mr. Ouellette and Ms. Underwood, I think, have requested. And then after they conclude, Mr. Elwood, we'll have questions for the proponents. If we can have your testimony done within 3 or 4 minutes, I'd appreciate it as well. To very veteran hands of the legislature, I know you can do it. Mr. Ouellette, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, representatives, my name is Pierre Ouellette with the City of Minneapolis. Ms. Underwood and I have been working on this for quite some time. It's nice to actually be able to testify on it. Just so you know, I'll give a little brief on Minneapolis and why we are supportive of this bill. It's kind of a shocking number, but there are 10,000 vehicles abandoned in Minneapolis every year, and Minneapolis is stuck with dealing with them. Our impound operations lose about $4.1 million a year because of those abandons. Now, we get the vehicles, but unfortunately, in our throwaway society, there are fewer and fewer people that actually fix them up and resell them, which it once did. So even after the sale of the vehicles, we lose about $3 million a year. And that's lost to the general fund. That isn't a special fund, so that's money that the cities could use for police, fire, other public works activities. It's interesting that you can't get rid of a battery or a tire without paying a fee, but you can abandon an entire vehicle in the streets of Minneapolis and not have any, we have no recourse for collecting on that. So that's why we're quite supportive of the fund that gets set up. We do send letters to folks. They don't have the weight now of the deficiency claim, and sometimes we get responses and sometimes we don't. But it's certainly something that that costs us a lot of money and keeps us from using those general fund dollars for other things. Just one last point to make, you know, we have a 311 system that tracks the calls for people for city service. Abandoned vehicles and vehicles improperly parked, one of the top calls that the city gets. It's something that our residents call in about all the time, about abandoned vehicles, so we're swift about taking them off. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ouellette. Ms. Underwood, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. I am Wendy Underwood with the City of St. Paul, and I echo Mr. Ouellette's interest in getting a chance to really speak to this issue. We very much appreciate all of the cooperation of the bill authors, the chair, and others in helping pull together something that, frankly, we don't all love. but we think moves the issue forward. I'll just share, for the city of St. Paul, our impound lot is entirely self-funded, and we do tow about 14,000 cars a year, with 5,000 of those being abandoned. And when you total the amount of uncollected towing and storage costs out of those 5,000 cars, it's about $2 million a year. And that, in my rough math, is just under 2% levy increase. So it's real money to the city of St. Paul. And so we very much appreciate the collaboration on the abandoned vehicles account portion of this bill. And I will also note that this will change city policy. We do have a policy to not allow a person to collect contents before paying their towing and storage costs unless authorized by the impound manager, which happens just about 100% of the time. So this will change our policy, not necessarily our current action.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Underwood. Does the committee have any questions of Mr. Elwood, Mr. Ouellette, or Ms. Underwood? Representative Severson, I see you getting ready here. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Caitlin. And you know, the towers come to my office yesterday, and we talked a little bit about it. I have an amendment here. I'm not sure if I'm going to offer it forward, but I think we're talking two different issues here. The reason that the legal aid brought this forward is to allow things to be taken out of the car. We're talking about a different issue with Minneapolis-St. Paul. As they outlined the issue in my office was that there are a lot of throwaway cars, as was described here. People go down who do not have a valid license or they don't have insurance. They go down and they may buy a personal vehicle with 6 to 9 months left on the tag. They may drive that vehicle around. The person who sells the vehicle has a little green title card, is required to send that in within 7 to 10 days and send that in to DMV, which should cue DMV to say, hey, you just sold this car. You're alleviated from any responsibility. The person buying the car has the same other portion of the car is supposed to send it in. They aren't doing it. Number one, the state is losing out on the invest, the tax, and we're finding that a lot of these towed vehicles have 5 and 6 transactions taking place without any registration actually being followed through on. So it presents a much bigger problem than $1.50 on which we're talking about and the resolution. And the reason I say that is I have this bill that basically puts some money fines onto not filling it out and sending it in to actually have the process go through so that people would be more compelled to finish the paperwork on this thing. And so I just throw that out there as a point of discussion as we move forward in this particular bill. Mr. Chair, thank you.
Thank you very much. Good points, Representative Severson. Does anyone want to briefly comment on Representative Severson's comment?
Yes, Representative Kalin. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Severson. The title issue is a huge concern here, and I think that it's sort of like e-waste and garbage, and I mean this is what's the sort of throwaway part of our society that's frankly we don't really talk about too much, and it's come to the fore for me a great deal. What I did promise the towers and with the knowledge of the other stakeholders is that the worst fear would be to have the get your stuff back policy piece without any of the funding with them. And so you'll even see that the effective date in Section 11 ties the two together. You can't have the policy without the funding. And so that's just to address the issue of why we're dealing with all this stuff together, because I think that they are very much interrelated and interconnected. I had a chance to quickly view your amendment. I haven't had a chance, actually. I don't have it with me. So if you might even be able to zip me a copy, I can look it over, and while we're hearing other testimony, I have a copy now. So,
okay, any other questions? Thank you, Representative Kalin. Any other questions of the proponents of the bill? If not, I will call on Ms. Any other? Okay. Mr. Seward and then Mr. Schoenborn, if they're here. Could have both of you come forward. We'll start, I guess, with Mr. Seward, if you could state your name for the record.
Todd Seward. I'm from Red Wing, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
I represent my towing company in Red Wing and also the Minnesota Professional Towing Association.
Thank you. Proceed.
The reason we're here today is, obviously, we're connected directly with the abandoned vehicles. We haven't had much time to look at this bill. It just We got it 3 minutes ago. But I believe what has already been said about the bill is that we're trying to take care of three interests here. Our interest is with the contents of the vehicle. We heard testimony from Ron Elwood about his clients that have had problems getting contents back. We deal with somewhere between 10 and 20,000 vehicles a year. There's 600 towers in the state approximately. We don't know how many people have claims with the Legal Aid Society. We've asked for those figures. We haven't been produced with any of them. So we feel that we represent not only 600 towers, but the better general public. The reason we do hold contents is to, as it was stated, to give an incentive for the people to come in and pay for the vehicle. A lot of times the vehicle does not have any value, and the contents in the vehicle does have value. It's an incentive for them to take care of their bill responsibly, be able to come and conduct their business responsibly in our facility. What will happen when we don't have that incentive is they won't conduct themselves in a proper manner. We won't have control over impound lots. It's a great safety issue to us as far as personnel, and it's a great risk in our impound lots. It doesn't state what contents that the registered owners can take. They can come and take whatever they want and whenever they want, leave what they don't want, and leave us with the bag. Now, it's been suggested before they came up with fees to take care of this, to just pass the expenses along. The expenses are too great. The percentage of vehicles that are getting abandoned are too high. It's just not responsible for us to do that. Our cities don't want us to do that. They think our costs are too high the way it is. So that's just not feasible. Just quickly looking at the bill here with the funds that would be collected, my understanding is about 1 million vehicles a year get registered in the state of Minnesota. If they're going to collect $1.50 per registration, that's $1.5 million. And as the city of Minneapolis and St. Paul said, they're losing, you know, $5-6 million a year. You can double that just about for the rest of the private tours. The $1.5 million is going to be a question of how whether we can distribute those fairly to help with the problem. So those are the questions that we have. I think that we've worked for several years to try and solve this abandoned vehicle problem responsibly for all parties. And until we get the content issue taken care of properly, we can't support this bill.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Seward. We have Mr. Schoenborn.
My name is Mark Bonstrom. I'm with Mark Stowing and Egan, and I'm the president of our Minnesota Professional Towing Association.
Okay, could you again state your name? I guess is there a Mr. Schoenborn that wants to testify? Or?
No.
Okay. All right, again, please.
Sorry about that.
No, I apologize.
All right. Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Mark Bonstrom, and I'm the president of the Minnesota Professional Towing Association. I just would reiterate what Todd has said. We've worked diligently to try to come up with a means of working out this for both ways. One of our biggest concerns is that the abandoned cars we'll have will double when we have to write in the letter, which they have clearly stated in here, that there's absolutely no cost to them to come and get their deal. We notify them now by certified letter, completely telling them what the costs are and everything. And when we have to put in there, and they specifically tell us what bold print, if it's 30% now or 40% for some tours or whatever, it will double that. So now we're going to have an even larger amount of abandoned cars. We've stated all along, we don't want their property. We've asked for figures on where these presents were held, where the wheelchair was held. We've never once been provided with any of that to find out where a tour would do that. That one thing that's kind of lost in sight of this whole deal is these cars are impounded because they've broken the law of some sort. They either left their car abandoned on the road, we moved it so the snowplow could get through, you see them every day, or some other reason. So it's not as if it's just your neighbor's car broke down and we impounded and wouldn't give them back their stuff. There's a reason why the police had us tow it. We didn't just grab any old car and tow it. So as far as the money, we're all for trying to recover some of our money through the state, We've been, the privateers have been impounding cars probably as long as they've been being driven, and we feel like we handled it in a very good manner. This has never been a large issue with people not getting their property, if that I know. I've had a few instances, and we've always been able to work it out. Either the Dakota County called me, and if I had someone's car that was homeless or whatever, they needed their stuff, we worked it out. So there's means to do it. It's just if once it gets put into law like this, it's going to really tie us to not being able to make decisions like that, because oftentimes those people aren't the registered owners of the car anyways. And now the law will require us to not be able to give those people, who probably it is their stuff, their property back. So as far as the weight issue bill goes, we appreciate them putting that on there. We had been working that through in another system anyways. We feel we could get that through on its own, so we, however nice it is they put that on, and we sure do appreciate it, but we just don't feel that we can agree to this bill with the contents as it stands today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bonstrom. Thank both of you for your testimony. Are there any questions of either Mr. Seward or Mr. Bonstrom from members of the committee? Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering, you know, right now you're obviously making money. You're in business and you have employees and vehicles that you're able to pay for. What are you doing with the abandoned vehicles now? I'm sure there's a range of things. And, you know, I'll just tell you, my family's in the automotive recycling business, and so I know some of those cars have value. Some of them have a negative value because of the hazardous materials we have to take out of them. I'm just wondering, what does the average towing operator do with those vehicles right now?
Well, presently, if you've got background in it, scrap metal is up right now. The economy, it's worth something right now. On the East Coast, and not too many years ago, we had to pay to take them, or they would just only take them for free. So now, presently, the scrap yards are... They've got some value, so we're able to recover part of our expenses. Obviously, we're not recovering our, you know, most of us would have two tows in it. We'd tow it in, we'd tow it out, we'd have two certified letters in it, and then the 45 days of storing it, let alone if it's got anything that the junkyard won't take. If it's full of tires, full of shingles, full of washers, dryers, you wouldn't believe how many people are leaving their TVs in their cars now, and, you know, old computer stuff like that, that of course the scrapyard doesn't want to take. So presently that's what we're doing, and right now there's some value to it. Now if the pendulum changes and it goes the other way where there's no value, now we're paying to get rid of them, or and the scrapyards don't want them, now we're really going backwards. Oftentimes right now we try to, and the one way we get them to deal with this is once they get that certified letter, if they are the registered owner, and they have anything that they think that they want on it, we are trying to deal with them on, let's deal with it right now responsibly. We don't want to hold the car 45 or 60 days if we don't have to, and you don't want to have this incurring charge going up every day. So let's try to deal with it. Come in, get your stuff, pay us for our tow, pay us, you know, for whatever we can recover out of it, and then we can get rid of the car quicker. So,
I reiterate just one second.
Thank you.
As far as the profitability and so forth, that's why we're here, and that's why our concern is great. Is years past, we could actually recover enough. We never really made money on it, but we could recover enough through the process of sale of junk cars. Now, with the insurance costs raising, the equipment costs raising, the fuel costs raising, health insurance costs raising, no, we can't keep up. That's why we're here. We want to make sure we can continue the service and still stay in business. And if it continues, we probably won't. The percentage of the abandoned vehicles are going up every year. A lot of reasons why that is, but that's the main concern. We want to be able to continue doing it.
But one last follow-up report.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just the reason why I ask is, you know, when I was absent from this committee for 2 days in Washington, D.C., our industry is lobbying the federal government because the price of cars is getting out of reach for automotive recyclers. So I know the price is going up, and I just think that there's a disconnect here, that we have one industry, you know, we're out there trying to change federal law because we can't get our hands on cars. And you've got lots of cars that you can't seem to get rid of, and there's a difference between a scrap dealer who just cuts them apart and shreds them and an automotive recycler, and I just wonder if we shouldn't see if there's a missing link there, that there's a way to make this more profitable.
If you're looking at auto recycling, you're buying the cars to sell parts and so forth, correct? Okay, now these cars that we're talking about are, and I think the average recycler keeps a car 9 years old or newer, maybe. They're all different, but they have a limit to how far and how old they go and how many miles. The cars we're getting are exceed any value. For example, my cars, almost all of them go to the scrapyard. There's no recyclable thing left. They're all wore out, retired. That's why they don't come and reclaim.
Thank you. Representative Stevenson, did you have a question?
Just a statement, Mr. Chair. And that would be, you know, we have a law in the books. It's called littering. And I don't know why we don't enforce that law, particularly for these people who are leaving off the side of the road. And if they're not coming in and claiming the vehicle, they're obviously littering. $500. And I don't know why, I don't know if it would, pardon?
$750.
And maybe instead of doing my amendment, that'd be a lot of cleaner way of doing that. Just a thought.
Point well taken. Do we have any other questions? And I think we have one more person that would like to testify. Is that correct? Okay, please proceed, and then we'll, if there are no further questions, then we'll have Representative Kalin present some very brief closing comments, and then we'll vote.
Well,
on
Mr.
the bill.
Chair and House members, my name is Sue Nelson. I'm the government chair for the Minnesota Service Station Association, and I'm also an independent dealer who does towing. First, I just wanted to address the fact that I do believe there's two separate issues of this amended bill. I think they do need to be separated. The collective fund, I don't necessarily have an issue with. The property issue is where we really have a stand on. It is a collateral tool to our industry. When a vehicle is abandoned, when it is collected, taken into our possession, we are responsible for that vehicle. Every part of that is part of the car. If property owner wants the wheelchair back, they want their Christmas presents back, why don't they just pay for the tow? It is not the towing company's responsibility. We have been dispatched by the city. It is part of our duty to get it off the road. We feel that a lot of the private companies that have been brought up, the private smaller towing companies, will probably start refusing them calls, and it'll be deferred to the city contracted towing companies, and the churches, the schools, the roads where these abandoned vehicles are left will be deferred to those city contract towing, because those are the ones that are guaranteed payment. Those are the ones with the guaranteed space available for storage. Because if we are not going to be guaranteed payment and reimbursement, if we're going to defer payment from the actual party who's responsible, which is the consumer, if we're going to take the power out of our hands and defer from the customer, then I don't know if many towing companies are going to continue doing what they're doing. Small businesses support our economy, and that's what the Minnesota Service Station is about, and we really are looking for the legislation not to necessarily create a policy and let us mandate our towing policies in that nature.
Thank you, Ms. Nelson. Are there questions of Ms. Nelson? Okay, I appreciate your testimony. Representative Kalin, final closing comments?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hortman.
I have a question for Representative Kalin. I'm sorry, I was presenting a bill across the hall.
Okay, why don't we...
very brief question.
A couple of questions for Representative Kalin, and then he'll conclude. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kalin, who can get things out of the car? Is it just the registered owner?
Representative Hortman, or Mr. Chair, Representative Hortman, I do believe it is only the title holder of the car.
Thank you.
Thank you. Final question for Representative Kalin. Your comments. Oh, Representative Severson.
And just a comment here, Mr. Chair and Representative Kalin. I appreciate you bringing the bill forward. I think there are two separate issues here. I think the leverage that's talked about by the towers is particularly in light of the economic issues, I think is a necessary leverage. I guess saying that, I'm going to vote against the bill because I basically think we've got to, if we take care of the one issue, and that is how do we dispose of these vehicles and hold people accountable who are dumping on the side of the road, it'll take care of the other issue. So I just feel like this bill would just be a patchwork and would not be the answer that we're really looking for. So I just wanted to say why I'm going to vote no on
it. Thank you. And Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just very briefly, I'm just very concerned about our small businesses, and I think they're compelling. Their testimony has been compelling, so I too would I'll be voting against the bill.
Okay. All right. Well, with that, Representative Kalin, Representative Nelson, I'm trying to think. No, I
moved the bill.
Yeah. Okay. Representative Nelson will renew his motion that House File 528 be recommended to the Transportation Policy and Finance Committee for possible inclusion in the Transportation Policy Omnibus Bill as amended. Moving this bill as amended. So, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion carries, and we'll now consider this for possible inclusion in the transportation policy bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And while we're doing that, for members of the public, because we still have some people here before folks leave, and we're going to move the minutes, and we're going to do Representative Junkie's bill and then adjourn. I have had the opportunity to talk with the ranking minority member of the committee, Representative Ruth. I've had the opportunity to talk to Chair Leader. I've had the opportunity to talk with our staff, and we have reached agreement that it's in all of our interest that we do this bill on Friday morning, that we mark up the omnibus bill on Friday morning. We now have two additional bills that we're going to be doing tomorrow night that we didn't get to, or tomorrow afternoon or evening that we didn't get to today. So it's just going to be very difficult for the staff to process the bill and for us to get it out for commentary and posting, et cetera. So in the interest of good process, we are going to convene at 8 a.m. on Friday. I don't anticipate a terribly long meeting, but I think members should set aside at least a couple of hours on Friday morning. We'll mark up the transportation policy bill at that time. We also will have a bill number for the staff tomorrow as well, responding to Representative Holberg's concern. So we are going to do this Friday. Thank you, Representative Ruth, for your very constructive input on that process. And
thank you.
I think that's for the best. We're going to get a better product by waiting. So with that, we do have a quorum. I'd like to move approval of the March 14th minutes. There's a typo. It says March 7th on the agenda. We're actually approving the March 14th minutes. I know that Representative Severson is very diligent about the minutes and is probably in position to move them. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion carries. I'd like to do one more bill before the Tax Committee takes over this room, ironically, to do the transportation bill, so folks may want to stick around for that. We have House File 1219, Representative Junkie's bill. Representative Leader, were you going to be able to do that with Representative Junkie's absence?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Leader, I'll call on you to move the bill, explain what we're doing here, and the amendment. That's okay. Members of the public and the committee, we are reverting to item number 8, House File 1219. I think with that, we're probably not going to have time for Mr. Amzelt's bill or my bill. So I apologize for people who are waiting for those two. We'll take those first thing tomorrow, if we can. Okay, Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the two things, the reason we need to do it, we have to recall it, and then it has to go back and come back. So it's in the full committee, we have to recall it here and then send it back, and it has to come back to the full committee. So the first motion, I believe, is to recall the bill.
Okay.
House File 1219, I'd like to move that.
Okay, Representative Leader moves recalling House File 1219. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion carries. Representative Leader.
Then I'd like to move House File 12-19.
So moved, Representative Houseman.
Yeah, thanks to another issue.
Okay. We're now moving House File 12-19 back on the table of our committee.
And then I'd like to move an amendment to, actually there are two amendments that were sent back. The
okay.
First amendment is, okay, one amendment. It's H1219DE1. And basically what this is an amendment, and we do have someone to testify, and I would hope that basically it just needs a statement for the testifier, because what it does is provide some axle weight limits for a specific type of vehicle, which is requested by the ag community, and this is meets, complies with state weight regulations. It's also when it came out of their truck study they had that they completed. So basically this addresses that one type of truck. And Mr. Chair, I moved the amendment. That's
Representative
correct.
Leader moves the
we just have one testifier, and if I could call him, and this should be very short to Mr. Chair, because
okay.
This complies with the state weights and problems we have normally.
Okay, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Bruce Clave, and I lobby for a number of ag groups, Minnesota wheat growers, barley, all three sugar companies, the turkey growers, and so forth. Our amendment here was born out of a MnDOT truck study that we presented last year in Representative Earhart's committee. We didn't move it last year. Basically, as Representative Leader said, it allows 90,000 on six axles, 97 on seven for ag products only. You might hear that this breaks up the roads. In fact, the weight per axle is less. It's better for the roads. We have more braking power, and I was going to rely on some testimony from Representative Ansel's bill about that. It saves trips, and lastly, it saves fuel and emissions. So we support the amendment and appreciate Representative Leader bringing it forward.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the testifier for members of the committee? Okay. Now, is this the only amendment, Representative Leader?
That's correct.
Okay. Any discussion of the... of the House file as amended, 12-19. Okay, with that, Representative Leader renews his motion.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if there's an opponent. I don't know
okay.
if
I'm
not aware
can
of
anyone come forth, but you're reminding me that I should ask if there's anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify in favor or in opposition to House File 12-19 as amended. Okay, with that, Representative Leader renews his motion that House File... Representative Houseman.
No, sure. I'm sorry.
Okay.
It's good to see you.
Okay. The House File 12-19, as amended, be recommended for possible inclusion in the transportation policy omnibus bill. So we're moving this up to the Policy and Finance Committee where we will do the bill. So all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion carries. So 12-19 as amended will be before us in the omnibus bill markup. Now, Representative Houseman, waiting very patiently,
there,
Representative
there
Houseman.
There may not be sufficient time, but one of the testifiers from the Anvil's bill was from out of town.
Oh,
no,
I was not aware of that. If, yes,
that
yes, I would. That's a very good suggestion.
Even though the bill
thank you. Yes, that is standard practice, and I appreciate your bringing that to my attention. Members, we are going to take testimony now. On House File 1435, we are not going to vote on this, but we are going to take testimony from, I'm guessing this is Mr. Oswald.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd be prepared to vote. I discussed this with the author, and I'd be prepared to vote. I don't think it'd take that long to move out of the committee. You wouldn't have to come back.
Okay, we have 5 minutes, members. Is Mr. Brandt also in the audience? Are there any opponents to House File 1435?
I don't know about MnDOT. I don't believe it is because I understand they agreed with
okay.
it.
Okay, MnDOT is saying no. So I will take your recommendation to heart, Mr. Chairman, that if we can actually act on this bill today, then we don't have to deal with it tomorrow. And we also have someone that's traveled a long way, and we'll ask the patience of the Tax Committee, but I think we can get this done by 6.
Mr. Chair,
would you like to move the bill?
House File 1435 for possible inclusion in the omnibus policy bill.
Chairman Leader moves House File 1435 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and thank you, Representative Houseman. The bill is before us. Would Mr. Oswald like to testify first?
Yes. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Houseman. My name is Bob Oswald. I'm the co-chair of the Wood Fiber Joint Legislative Council, representing labor. I am also a past vice president of 12 years of Minnesota AFL-CIO Executive Board. I'm also the appointee representing labor on the Minnesota Forest Resources Council, being reappointed recently by Governor Pawlenty for the fourth time. I've been a papermaker for over 33 years at the Cloquet Mill, owned by Sappi presently, and I'm a union member of Local 1163 of the United Steelworkers, which makes me a papermaking steelworker.
Okay.
So I'm not sure how I got there, but that's where I'm at. Today I'm here representing my union brothers and sisters in support of House File 1435. If passed, it will be an important step in improving the competitive position of the forest products industry in Minnesota. It allows the same weights to be hauled for the products that we make with the same restrictions as we have for hauling wood into our mills. This legislation has ample protection for our roads. It restricts where, when, and how we would haul our products. We are familiar with these restrictions, and we see trucks with six axles hauling wood into our mills daily. Any logger will tell you that they can feel extra braking power with the sixth axle, even with the increased weights, which makes our roads safer for all of us. Times have been tough in our industry. We have had many of my union brothers and sisters and others lose their jobs and get laid off. One of our biggest costs is transportation. It is estimated that this bill, with combining with the existing law, will save 15% of the fuel that is burned for transporting wood and wood products. A 15% fuel savings is good for the environment, good for the competitive position of our industry, and securing our good-paying jobs in Minnesota. I thank Representative Ansel for carrying this bill. He has been a part of organized labor and a friend of the Minnesota jobs for many years. The Wood Fiber Council goes on record in support of this bill, and we urge you to support House File 1435.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of Mr. Oswald? Thank you, and I appreciate your coming down and traveling such a long distance to be before us. Our last testifier in support of House File 1435 is Mr. Wayne Brandt.
Mr. Chairman, Wayne Brandt, Executive Vice President of Minnesota Forest Industries. I really have nothing to add to Mr. Oswald's testimony, maybe a few amplifications. There was in your packets a handout including pictures of the exact configurations that we're talking about. This is a bill that's good for the roads. It's supported by the MnDOT study. It's good for the environment with reduced fuel usage and has lots of restrictions on how we can use it, and we're familiar with using that from the existing law. So I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Any questions of Mr. Brandt? I just wanted to point out in the final picture this on the bottom, that's not extra exhaust pipes. There's actually another truck parked.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's the first thing that came. I was a little worried that this would involve more emissions, but I'm
fewer emissions.
Yeah. Okay, members. If there are no further questions. Representative Leader renews his motion that House File 1435 be recommended to the Transportation Policy and Finance Committee for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? The motion carries. Thank you. And again, thanks to Representative Houseman. We will adjourn, but before we do that, just a reminder that we will be convening at 2:15 tomorrow. We'll take up my bill that we were not able to get to today, and my apologies to those that had planned on testifying on House File 1630. We'll take that up tomorrow. We have two sets of bills. We'll be considering bills that from 215 to 345. We'll recess, because I'm sure we will not get through all the bills at that point. We'll recess until 6 p.m., and I would estimate that we'll probably get done sometime between 8 and 9 if everyone can be efficient as we were today. But efficient, but also giving the public and committee members an opportunity to have their voices heard. So, with that, members, we stand adjourned until 2:15 tomorrow. Thank you, everybody.